highlighted, the chairperson is currently busy with her exams, as such, she won't be part of the meeting. The meeting for tonight is convened to discuss two issues. The first item on our agenda is the petition from the residents of Ward 23 in Zanini, calling for the National Assembly to investigate non-compliance with laws and bylaws and regulations by the Zanini and local municipalities. I'm sure all of us have seen or interacted with the petition brought before us by the residents of Ward 23. That will be the first item on our agenda. We'll afford the Honourable Member 5 minutes to take us through the petition, as we have all had an opportunity to read and interact with the petition. There's just one page and other pages where the signatures of those residents that were present in the meeting at the time of launching the petition. After the presentation, we'll then afford an opportunity to the local municipality to respond to the petition. Once they've responded, we'll also afford an opportunity to the Department of Cooperative Governance, Human Settlement and Traditional Affairs in Limpopo to also have a bite. That will be followed by the discussion by the Honourable. Can I then check with the list of the attendees if all our attendees are present to the meeting? Honourable members, we are expected from the Greater Zanini Local Municipality to have the Executive Mayor. Councillor Manyana, is the Honourable Councillor present?
Councillor Manyana Maribe is present. Leadership, thank you very much.
Can I then afford you an opportunity to also confirm if the rest of your team is present?
Yes, the municipal manager is also present, Honourable Member.
Are you only having a municipal manager? On our list, we also expected to have the environmental director and the legal advisor.
Yes, they are present.
All right. Can I also get a confirmation from the Limpopo Department of Cooperative Governance, Human Settlement and Traditional Affairs? Dr. Majaji, the Deputy Director, are you present?
Dr. Malatela, Chairperson, has reported to be having challenges in looking in the last time I checked it.
Can I then get a statement of who's leading the delegation from
planning to join the meeting?
Okay. Your line is said, Honourable Member. Can I get an indication who's leading the delegation from the side of COPSA in the Congo? Honourable Members, can you hear the speaker, or is it only me struggling to hear?
No, we can't hear. Can I assist?
Yes, go ahead.
You are speaking to me. Why we still waiting for Dr. Balashena? I'm available. It's the injury of my body. I'm with Mr. Tsenga, whose line is not that clear, but I think you will sort it out.
Thank you, Chair. All right, thank you. From the side of National COPTA, we have the DM, Honorable Obed Babela. DM, is your team with us?
I'm definitely present, Chairperson. I'm here also. Thank you.
Okay, can you confirm whether the DG and the DDG are present?
I see DDG Tau, number of other officials that are there. So I think I only see the digital. I don't know that whether the others are present or not.
All right. Thank you, DM. From the side of SALGA, we're expecting to have Councillor Stofile and Lance. Anyone from SALGA?
Chair, thank you very much. Lance, I am present. Councillor Stofile is having connectivity challenges.
All right, thank you. Colleagues, we have the full...
Chairperson, can I also confirm that DG Dipofa from Traditional Affairs is present? And right. Willelo also from DCOC is also present here.
Thank you, DM. It therefore means, colleagues, we have the full complement of all invitees within our meeting. Let us...
Also acknowledge the presence of the chair of the CRL. They are also here.
All right. My apologies. I did not get that confirmation on the list of the attendees.
Thank you, DM.
Okay. Do you have any... colleagues with you, accompanying you, or are you the only one, Chair? CRL?
The CEO and the DC, the Deputy Chairperson.
All right.
Three
okay.
One.
Colleagues, you are welcome, all of you, and all protocol observed. Let's then take this opportunity and hand over to Honorable Devout to introduce to us the petition. You have 5 minutes, ma'am. As I've indicated, we have gone through the petition, we have read the petition in terms of what it contains, the non-compliance of bylaws in relation to cattle that are roaming around the streets and the mechanical. Yes.
Okay, Chair, sorry to interrupt. Look, Chair, have you also established the quorum, the committee's members, if we are present, if we form the quorum, to mark a register on the members?
You are progressive, Honorable Mkalipi. In terms of the attendees, I see Honorable Brink, Honorable Mkalipi, Honorable Xeza, Honorable Inkosi Uluthuli, Honorable Preti Kavanjaba present. Are there any other members that are Honorable Opperman Giselle, in terms of the list of attendees? Those are the members present and they exceed the required number to meet the quorum.
Chairperson, I'm also here.
All right. The meeting is duly corrected, colleagues. We can therefore proceed. Did I miss any member of the portfolio committee?
Chairperson, will you recognize that I'm Honorable Grunewald is also present, please?
Yes, Honorable Grunewald present as well. Are there any colleagues? In the absence of apologies, we'll then hand over to Honorable Devout to take us through the petition. You have 5 minutes, Honorable Member. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair. Am I audible?
Loud and clear.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the opportunity. And I think the presentation that the COC staff Limpopo sent this afternoon, basically on the last slide, is covering what we would want except for two things. And just as background, I must tell you, Chair, that Lester Taylor is part of the Greater Zanine Municipality. It is a very, very small little village town right in the middle of one of our country's biggest agricultural sectors. There's about 100 residential properties and a small industrial, very well-kept school and police station. So what we found is that we do not want to chase economic potential away from Letsatheli. In fact, what the municipality says here is what we want. What we want is a specific place for our mechanics to do their business. They must be issued with. But we cannot allow it against the town planning scheme and on the pavements of residential houses where it is not correct. I accept these bullet points on the last page, the last slide of Cook's. That the municipality referred to was in the office of the environmental manager for months. Up until yesterday, we have not seen these drip trays delivered to the mechanics, and they are still dumping all their oil right next to the wall of the post office, where it could become a danger to our elders who actually go and take out their post from their post boxes. And secondly, Chair, there is absolutely not a single time frame attached to these plans and progress that the municipality said to COGSTA they have made. So if we can have that, and of course feedback as they progress to us, it will be very, very helpful. And that is basically, Chairperson, which we want. There is a small municipal office in Letsatheli, and I'm very surprised that the officials working there have not seen this. And I see the mayor is on there, and he knows that I only live a few kilometres away from Letsatheli. So if Mayor Mangena can make sure that we get this, we don't have any other problems. We want Letsatheli to remain as good as it is in our tropical town. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Member. We'll then give over to the municipality to respond. Honourable Executive Mayor, over to you.
Thanks very much, Chair of the meeting. Greetings to the Deputy Minister. Greetings to members of the Portfolio Committee and the House at large. It's good to see you again, Chair.
Would you like to slide the presentation, or how are you going to proceed with the response?
I just give a brief background, and the municipal manager will then deal with the rest of the administrative issues. Just to highlight that we would also want to acknowledge receipt of the petition as forwarded to us from Parliament, and that the first point would be that as a municipality, we are using an open policy. We would have preferred that the residents of Citadel with whom we have got serious contact with on numerous occasions would have preferred that such matters would have been raised with us, because as the MM will be presenting, you'll be aware that we have had, we have taken some steps to try and remedy the situation previously, but we appreciate that today we are dealing with it. I think we'll also be able to accept recommendations that would be coming, but steps were taken. In fact, in future, say, the ward councillor is there to be communicated, and if there are certain challenges, the office of the mayor should then be contacted so that we are able to attend such matters. But without much ado, let me allow the municipal manager of Greater Zaria Municipality, Mr. Matala, to take the house administratively on the issues that we are doing to interact with the situation there. Municipal manager, Mr. Matala, can you take the house into confidence of the things that we're doing?
Thanks, Mayor.
MM, can you slide your presentation for all members to see?
And it was emailed to is it the Lady Kasim, the administrator there of the portfolio committee. I'm not sure whether she can slide the presentation there.
Sharon, can you assist in sharing the presentation?
Chairperson, will try to do that. It's just that it didn't come through on Parliament's email, so it's a bit difficult. But I'm trying to sort it out.
Okay. Is Andile not present this evening? Anele, can you assist where you can?
As soon as I get the presentation on the email, I will slide it.
All right.
Can I proceed?
Honourable members?
Yeah, he can proceed because it's only one page, Chair. It's not something that we can struggle with.
All right. MM, you can proceed in the meantime.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me acknowledge yourself, the Deputy Minister, and members of your committee, and our traditional leader, and also the colleague from Salga. Let me also go straight into the matters. Chair, I just want to mention that this matter came as a surprise to us, that it was referred to the portfolio committee. As the mayor has alluded, that we are quite aware of the matter, and in fact we have wrote a letter to the mechanics to comply. When the presentation is flighted, we will show you that letter. We also had a meeting, and the attendance register of that meeting will also be flighted with regard to the issue there. But what we have done as a municipality is that as early as 2016, we got a donation of trap trails which were issued out. Trap trails are containers that are used for oil, and also there was a company which was collecting the oil in order to reuse it and so forth. So what has been the challenge is that our traffic officers, members of parliament would know also that our traffic officers are also peace officers. So, and we have also now of late passed bylaws which are gazetted. In the beginning, we did not have gazetted bylaws. So we had the minimal teeth to bite. And now with the bylaws being gazetted, we are able to take action. However, I must also mention that we are finalizing the tariffing pricing for the fines as to how much we for any contravention. So we are sorting out that with the local magistrate court, and once we are done with that, we will be able to take action. So, in a nutshell, there are really no challenges. We know about the matter. We are attending to it. I can also even confirm, over and above the donations, the municipality has bought 8 of the oil drips, and we will also be handing them over there for the mechanics to use that. So I think that's the long and short of the story. Basically, I wouldn't really. Monitoring is continuing. I think in the petition also, which the Honourable Member of Parliament did not talk to, it was about roaming any animals and all that. We have put in mechanisms in terms of monitoring, and also we have where we take stray animals, either it be cows and so forth, to a particular facility in the municipality. If members of the public see any of those, they just need to report to the municipality to be able to take care of that. I think that's the long and short of the story, Eche.
MMM, I would like to get from you the proposed way forward in relation to issues as it relates to the roaming of cattle, then had the cry and concern and the petition forwarded to you. I take your concern that the matter was forwarded straight to Parliament. You had not been afforded an opportunity to report until you saw the petition from Parliament. There's an issue also about the mechanics. I take what you are saying in terms of busy finalizing the tariffs that will impose fines. Also, that the bylaws will be gazetted soon. But in relation to what is brought before us, what then becomes the way forward? There's issue of time frames that are not clear. Can you then be able to give us a sense before I give over to members to interact? Just give us the sense of direction so that when the members interact, they interact based on proposed way forward in relation to the petition.
Thanks, Chair. If you look at the last slide, which I will talk to it point by point, it starts by saying on the 23rd of January, we had a joint inspection which was undertaken by environmental management, traffic and town planning to identify a site where the mechanics would be relocated. That's one. Two is that prior to the lockdown, we bought 20 8-liter trays for the mechanics in order to use them for oil. Number three is that officers from each division will be trained also over and above the traffic as peace officers, so that they are able to have the authority to act, particularly around fines. Parallel to this, it's the issue of finalizing with the magistrate, and then, like as I said, we have established a pound in the municipality where stray cattle can be taken, and this is largely informed by the community itself reporting if there are stray cattle. And basically, it's continuous monitoring of these processes. Can you talk about time frames? These are matters that we are preoccupied with, I wouldn't want to commit myself to time frames. But like as I said, this is not something new. It's not a revelation to us. We know that there's been challenges and we are acting on them.
Chair, just one last thing, Chair, from me. The
Delhi City, Delhi town, is basically surrounded by farms. And our understanding is that the stray animals should be coming from those farms. I think one of the remedies that you can be able to employ would be to also make sure that we are able to communicate with those nearby farmers, especially those that are having cattle. And I think that should be an easy task to perform. We should be able to do that. And when monitoring is done by the portfolio, we should be able to find that we are also including that and we are able to move forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor. Colleagues, you've had the presentation and you've also had the response from the municipality. I will then hand over to the provincial leadership in COPTA, which will also have a bite before we give over to member for discussion. Leadership of COPTA in the province.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can you summarily give the presentation from the department?
Thank you very much. And good evening, Chairperson. I was trying to my presentation. First presenter has also touched on the content of our presentation, but what I would like to give department that's what that is expected from the department. In terms of section 105, the MEC for COPTA is there to establish mechanism to support all the municipalities in the province. And in relation to the subject at hand, we are supporting municipalities in developing and gazetting the bylaws for all, this of course, yes, including being part in supporting the municipality in ensuring that they have all the necessary bylaws and the gazetting thereof. So upon receipt of the very same petition, we engaged the municipality to check exactly what the effects on the ground, hence the consolidated report that is forwarded to your office, Chairperson, and is with the presentation made by the local municipality after having engaged with them during this week, and which has been the practice even before the incident in hand. And as a way forward, we are committing to play our oversight role in ensuring that in the very same activity, including advising them how to implement the very same bylaws, and where in the municipality has got challenges, they are more than welcome to elevate it to our level, wherein we can engage whoever stakeholder. If ever a particular sector is a barrier, our department has to engage with the other sector departments in ensuring that the municipality get the necessary support. Thank you. With me, I thought Dr. Malakela, as I said, she has noticed that she has joined. We are really struggling to to hear you. Your line is very bad. You keep on breaking. I'm not too sure whether it's only me, honorable members, but from my side, I can barely hear what is being presented and proposed as the way forward. I'm not too sure whether amongst your team, can someone else who has a better connection try and engage with us? Because I thought as you continue presenting, yes.
Okay, Chair, summarily to what my colleague have already said, as the department, it is our role to support the municipalities. So what we are doing in as far as the bylaws are concerned, we assist municipalities in making sure that they comply in making sure that their bylaws are well legislated. And we also assist municipalities in gazetting those bylaws until whereby a municipality adopt the bylaws. So greater than in just like other municipalities in the province, they do have these bylaws that are already promulgated and are adopted by the municipality, as the MM have already indicated in the presentation. But now in this case, we have noticed that the municipality has already identified a pounding station or area where these animals that are astray in the Letitele area are going to be pounded. And another way of assisting is that the municipality may as well choose the surrounding communities in make sure that they are capacitated and on what the bylaw is all about, so that they must know that it is not allowed for animals to be astray in town in particular. And again, when it comes to the mechanics who are in town as well, I think what we have picked up with the municipality is what the MM have already presented to us. And the advice that we are giving to municipalities is that they just need to enforce the bylaws and make sure that they are organized. They are all organized. They are in town and they are not in the village. So we also support the issue of making sure that we comply with the Environmental Act and keep our town clean. And the town can only be clean if the municipalities could be able to implement the bylaws. So as the department, we can assist them. And of course, we always write letters and advise municipalities that they need to apply the bylaws that they have passed. So that's very much important, and we are encouraging them that going forward, we just need to comply and enforce the bylaws. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I get, by show of hands, I can't see on my screen, members who indicated their interest. Can I see by show of hands members that want to interact? I see Honorable Kaza is the first one. Honorable Jebal.
On the platform, Chair.
Seza, Devout, Kalipi. Who else?
Yes, Chair, Kaba.
Mamukaba. Are those the only four hands?
Honorable Member Going One, Zanda. Alright, Honorable Keza, the floor is yours, followed by Honorable Devout.
No, thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity for us to speak. Look, Chair, at face value, it's a one-pager, right? At face value, I saw this complaint and asked myself, what is the causal factor? What are causal factors of this particular encroachment of cattle and the engineers having to work in the pavement and so forth? And what occurs in my mind from the municipality, that's where I'm from, to begin with those engineers that are fixing cars there. What first occurred, taking from the municipality where I'm from, is the fact that municipalities do get monies from the surrounding businesses to donate for land to be given for industrial purposes by mines and other businesses around. And then what causes the delay and the overcrowding and the complaints pertaining to people fixing their cars? It's because people, once they don't have a choice, because municipalities are not diverging the donations that they get from those private companies. Because have they been doing what they are supposed to do in terms of putting the money for intended purposes? I'm sure that we wouldn't be coming here to discard cattle and all sorts of things. Secondly, what occurs to me, for instance, let me give, because before I pass to the cattle thing, which I do not even want to entertain, what happens here is the fact that sometimes even the municipalities, they are to blame for these things, and then they chase people around because they have the capacity of police and all those people they are telling us about to keep those people in check, without looking at the causal factor before they put those laws in place, and say that, but our people, these are the confining factors that causes them to have their back against the wall and have no choice anyway. For instance, Chair, you get a donation of dustbins here in the municipality of Stiftshoek. I'm just making an example. And then people, what the municipality then do, comes to the to people and sell those things at a 500 rand value, and you can see there that municipality is wants revenue at all costs. So we must not be desperate and things like that. You see, Chair. Number two, I want to speak to this cattle thing and ask the mayor how is the municipality fenced in terms of that, and how, if it's not fenced, how is, because I don't understand who is complaining, because the presentation speaks to the people my research here speaks to the people that are complaining about shepherds that go into their fields, you know. So I don't know who's complaining, because it's either, I don't know whether it's the community or whoever, but that's not being the case. What are the proposals and what are the developmental proposals? Because some of the things that cause these complaints is the rapid urbanization and rural depopulation, Chair. And such topics will become more and more, and as people are not used to each other, and people are not, some of them in this municipality of mine where I'm deployed, people get to be to lose their cattle for different reasons to urbanization. They are moved by this company colluding with the municipality and their bylaws to actually take them to areas where there is no grazing land. So I propose that the municipality please propose a developmental process in terms of what should be done in terms of those things. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
Honorable DeVault.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would just like to add, can you hear me, Chair?
Loud and clear, ma'am.
Sorry. Chairperson, I just said that there's no misperception. The mayor referred to farming area. He's quite correct, but that specific town, Letsitheli town, is a citrus farming area. The cattle is not from that specific farm. It comes from outside. And we have a primary school in the area. I work in that part of my constituency very actively. And we have had several instances where children were scared of walking home or the cattle going into the schoolyard as well while children arrive at school or leave school. There's also a church, and then they stray all over. So here's the thing. If the mayor now says that, and there is a property for impounding the stray cattle, which we, I think there's not communication to the community. It's the first time I hear that a property has been acquired, and I think the ward council of that area or the municipality should inform that community who they can contact if there is such a problem, if it still continues. And I have to say that first the mayor and the MM says it's a surprise, this petition, but I have it on the record that in January and February, we visited the health department, the environmental department, and I see that the plans in progress refers to the municipality board tray for distribution. Now, Chairperson, I would like to know at some point when this was delivered. Maybe they were in 2016, I don't know, and they haven't, or they've been overused, but they are not being used at the moment, and I don't think I want to go into an argument with my mayor of my town or the municipal manager, but we must talk of what is happening there currently. This is an ongoing concern. It hasn't stopped, and I'm very glad, as I said in the beginning, that steps are now being taken. Thank you.
Honorable Mkhalipi.
Ngiyabonga, Chairperson. I think I'm partly covered by what Honorable Qeza spoke about in terms of a way forward, because correctly you also asked the municipality the way forward. We can't be, it can't be that as a portfolio committee you must come and discuss the issue of astray cows. I think that the municipality must always try to accommodate each and every person who have anything that is concerning in the area. As Chairperson, you were asking, what is the way forward? Because the municipality also said, I can't remember if it's MM or is it the mayor, who said that they were shocked that this issue is here now in the committee. So, definitely sure, because according to the presentation that the MM was talking to the presentation, wanted to prove to the committee that they are addressing the matter, of course. So the issue of a time frame is quite important. And I also think that other stakeholders, because I was just thinking aloud, Chairperson, I was just thinking, but what is the role of the municipality again now? Let's say, Peggy, as the Chairperson now, your cows are going to a different areas or to a wrong area. So who must go and fetch those cows in the municipality? Is police? Is metropolis? So I was thinking aloud to say that I think that the stakeholders, because I'm pretty sure there are other stakeholders in the area of Tzaneen, of which are the owners of those cows, which are here to be discussed in the portfolio committee of COOPTA. They must be engaged to say that, guys, let us have make sure that our cows does not go to town, because they are not supposed to go to town. Or if the chiefs, if the leadership in the area, they must be also a Smolonyana committee, just to avoid those things. I'm sure that the mayor at the end of this will also just come with a way forward strategy, because they're saying that they've started to address these issues. So they will share with us how to address this matter, because as members of this portfolio committee, what we are interested in is to know how is this matter that is brought forward to us, especially the issue of cows, because the other issue of the pavement of the cars that are being serviced on the pavement, I think the mayor or the municipality is very clear. They have worked on that issue. It's just that there is a gap between those who wrote the petition, led by the member of parliament here, and the municipality itself. If there is leadership, because what I suspect here, there is no communication between whoever who wrote this and the municipality. One thing that is needed here is to have a person who's very proactive if there is such complaint. Not this complaint must come to national portfolio committees here. I thought maybe this petition is also talks about the issues of service delivery. Unfortunately, we got this petition very late. We couldn't even engage as a portfolio committee to say, maybe let us look in other ways to address the matter. So I'm appealing to the leadership of the municipality, the COOPTA in the province as well, to say that let us have an open door policy and address issues that we might think that are not important, but maybe it's important because it's there in the front of the portfolio committee. So I should think that most of the people must come together and form a Smolonyana committee to address issues of cows. That is my contribution, Chairperson. Thank you.
Honorable Preeti Kabanjaba, you'll be the last speaker on this matter.
Thank you, Sal. Let me welcome the presentation and also join the chorus of my colleagues when they are saying we are not a portfolio committee of Amadwandwan to discuss into the Komolan. Over now, yes, ma'am, please. I do have both near where I'm residing in Glen Austin. There is this, Honorable Mkhaliphi, they were not even from the Smolonyana committee. There is this people of Belwane, I forgot the name, SPCA, yeah. SPCA, they were calling me when my goats were outside my yard. They said I must put my goats inside my yard. They are not allowed to be all over. And I'm not in the town. As this thing, I'm in the plot in the area of plot. But they were not even one by God to be outside the yard. How can the municipality they are not implementing their bylaws and take those cows in the town and put them in the skid? We call skid where we must put cows so that the owner will come and bail their cows or their goats with money. Because it's not actually serious, this issue of an owner wants a cow to be in town. What did they do in town? What they are doing at town? They doesn't have any owner. If they do have owner, those owners, they must pay the municipality what they are doing about their cows. They are not allowed to be in the town. Is what I want to say here. Seriously, if I can say, I agree with Honorable Kaza and Honorable Mkhaliphi. I go, cows, a town, please, means mayor, or province of Kota help these municipalities implement their bylaw? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kabanchaba, Honorable Mayor, and Honorable MM. Over to you if you want to respond. And if the province also feel that there are issues that they will need to highlight, they are free to do so.
Thanks, Chairperson, is the mayor here. First, to agree with the sentiment as expressed by the members of the portfolio committee that indeed the matter, especially of the stray animals, it's a matter that would have been able to handle had it been presented to us as a concern. I think it would not have even reached that level. And I want to invite the leader, Van der Waals, to engage further with us. However, as we are raising, I indicated that especially the villages where we know there are many cattle, they are far away from the town. Those that are nearby are farms. I think a number of them would be having some camps. It would be very easy for the municipality to just write public notice or send letters to a number of those people as our way forward. Write to them and indicate to them that we have got this particular challenge of stray animals, and each one of them must be able to take care of the stray animals, and if not, the consequences would be this, indicating as well the fines. As long as people are aware of the pound that is established in order to arrest those animals, that should be a very, very good deterrent for people to take care of their own animals. But on the first one, I suppose, as the municipal manager presented, we have got a very clear plan, and this one should be very small. I spoke to the councillor before coming to this meeting, and of course, we agreed that there should be a program to do consultation with the community of Lesitele. Lesitele is a very small town. It looks beautiful. It's not like members must not have an impression that when you are in that town, you push your trolley, you meet cattle there. They would be seen perhaps at a particular time, not as often as the impression is created. But we are ready to engage further with the residents because they are our ratepayers. They are our constituency, and we are always available to interact with our communities. Thank you very much.
Now, thanks, MM. Can I then provide a summary and proposed way forward so that we close on this matter? Because, honestly speaking, I share the sentiment of my fellow colleagues and honorable members that this matter was not even supposed to be before us. If at least anything at all, it could have been escalated to the province if members felt that the municipality was not acting. You have indicated as the municipality that in 2018 you have identified the site for relocation of the tanks. All what is left is for us to get an indication of time frame for the relocation. We might give you a month or so to come back to us with a time frame on how you're going to act upon. But there's a commitment from the municipality that they are on top of this matter. You have also indicated to us that you have established a pounding area for stray animals that will deal with the issue of contravention with bylaws. What I would like to get from you, if I've heard you correctly, is that you are in a process to gazette the bylaw. Is that correct? The bylaw is there, you're just in a process of gazetting and concluding the issue of tariffs as a fine. Can I get that a confirmation if that's what I heard correctly?
No, the bylaws have been gazetted.
All right. So what if the bylaw is gazetted?
What is outstanding?
Can the chair finish talking when he
did? If the bylaw is gazetted, it means it includes what becomes a possible fine in an event of contravention. MM?
Thanks, Chair. categories of contraventions and classifications of contraventions are within the bylaw. What is outstanding in the bylaw is the actual tariff for fines. To say that, for example, if we find your stray animal here, this is the amount of the fine that you will pay. That is what is outstanding.
All right, no, thank you.
However, there is a process of doing that at a local level. We have to engage with the local magistrate court.
Thank you. Thank you, MM. I think I've captured you correctly. So the bylaw has been gazetted. What's outstanding is to finalize the level and the amount of fines per the categories. And the province has indicated willingness to intervene and assist as per their jurisdiction in terms of dealing with the issue of finalizing the fine. We have also noted that in terms of the willingness, the municipality is willing to engage with the nearby farmers to educate them in relation to the bylaw and what it means to contravene the bylaws. I understand that when these bylaws were drafted and published, all communities and surrounding areas that will be affected were consulted, comments were received from relevant structures, and the bylaws was published for everyone. So within the area and the community, all members are aware of the bylaws and what it means to contravene such a bylaw. So you're saying you're willing to go a step ahead and engage with the farmers to draw to their attention the impact of stray animals on the community and on the business within the surrounding area. Is that the undertaking that you are committing to this platform, Honorable Mayor?
Chair?
Yes, Honorable Brink?
Sorry, Chair, I don't mean to interrupt you or the Mayor. A point of clarity, I think I don't think the pens have to be relocated. I think the issue is the pens must be given to the mechanics. So if there's any, it's used, as I understand the presentation, for the draining of oil and the safe disposal of oil, so that it doesn't go into any water system or into the soil. So the pans that have been donated and have been bought must be given to the mechanics so that they can comply. I think that's the commitment. And as for relocation, what I understand is there is a property, a piece of land or pieces of land that has been allocated for this, and that's the progress that we need to check, if I understand correctly, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Mayor, is that the true reflection of the summary of what you presented to us?
Can I just... I was saying that let me just intervene there.
Yes.
The plan is to relocate them to a place where they will be able to perform this work. Now, that would include a particular property and so forth. The nitty-gritties of those have not yet been concluded. So, because it includes... budgeting, it includes finance and so forth. So we can't do that undertaking in this meeting with regard to time frames, because that will largely be informed by our resources. However, the intention is there as part of creating an orderly environment at Lizidele. However, in the interim, is to then provide those facilities where oil can be drained and all that. So, as the honourable member has said, in order to address environmental issues, because this oil spillage becomes a environmental hazard.
Thank you. Okay, so my understanding and yours, then we were correct. So we'll give you a month to give us a progress in terms of how far are you with the relocation. We understand and take the point you're saying that you cannot commit into the actual time frame of relocation because of financial implications involved. We therefore request that within a month's time, you give us a progress report that will clearly indicate how far are you in the process of relocation, and we'll monitor your progress based on the report given to us. Is that in order?
Chair, you see how the system works. We are at the tail end of the budgeting process. Council is adopting budget on Friday. That is why I was saying, let us not commit to time, because we will then have to look as to the resources and so forth. It will really be not appropriate for us to commit and say in a month we will come and say we're going there. We will not. I don't think it will be appropriate for the committee to give an answer which we will have difficulties going forward to implement. The long and short is that we are going to look at this matter and look at what is creative, and then be able to say that, like as I said, we are aware of the matter, we are working on the matter.
The proposal is for you to give us progress on what you would have engaged on within a month's time. We are not saying relocate within a month. We are proposing that within a month, if you are saying you have identified a site in 2018, we're in 2020 now. We're therefore saying to you, go back, engage, come back to us within a month's time with progress. Our response in relation to the progress will be informed by the report that you'll be forwarding to us. That does not seek to suggest that within a month's time, you must have relocated.
It is agreed. We will be able to provide the report of the way forward that we believe we'll be able to assist, depending on the material condition, as the municipal manager said. But we'll be able to provide that report within a month. But on the other question that you raised about stray animals, yes, the bylaws before passing them by passing by council, we did had public participation, did every step possible to make sure that the communities are aware up until we reach the stage of gazetting our bylaws. And therefore the communities are aware, but it is critical that once we have identified this problem, as a local governance, we should be able to go back to our communities and say to them, we have identified that besides the fact that we have got bylaws, your animals continue to stray, especially on the roads and other places where they become a danger to the society. And therefore, be informed that we are now going to start taking these steps. That will be the work that we'll be doing with our communities. And I think we should be able to as well provide progress in terms of public participation or community consultation, because it's a very small community, as the presenter indicated. There are not so many. We should be able to do that in this small space of time. Thank you very much.
Yeah. No, I think we are done on this matter. Within a month's time, we'll then get progress report in terms of how far you have gone with engaging the surrounding communities on the impact of the bylaw, where they participated and contributed. And now we're at the stage of implementation. So we'll get the progress report within a month's time. That progress report will include steps that will be taken to ensure that you realize your entry stage plan to relocate. We're not saying relocate now, but look into all the nitty-gritties and all the financial implications and what might be challenges and disadvantages in achieving the relocation, and then present to us a plan that will ultimately lead to you relocating to the identified site. I think if all of us are on the same page, we will then close the matter here. I will then hand over to the province if they have closing remarks, and DM if you have any closing remarks, and then we move to the second item on our agenda. Over to you, Costa, in the province. Any closing remarks?
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think you have summarized this matter well. My hand was up to say that we will monitor the process and make sure that the progress report is submitted after a month on this matter. And as the province, we will as well assist municipalities, because the bylaws are in place. What is left is only the implementation part of them. So we'll assist the municipalities in making sure that all the processes are followed and they are complying in as far as the legislations are concerned. Thank you.
Thank you. DM Mapela, any comments?
Thank you, Chairperson. Also to indicate first before that DM Dau did join the meeting just 5 minutes after you started the proceedings. So he has been here listening. But just also to say thanks to the team led by the Mayor, Mayor Mangena, and to all honorable members. We have a team called the Back to Basics that are deployed to all provinces. And then obviously in attendance here is the Chief Director based in Limpopo, Mr. Mpho Mogale, and he will then therefore ensure that we monitor the province to ensure that the municipality does as they had presented to the portfolio committee, and they do comply, as is our work on program Back to Basics, and that we work with the provinces to ensure that municipalities do comply. So we just want to give that undertaking that likely the teams are here, they've been listening, and they know what to do. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, DM. Anyone from the National Department that wants to comment?
Maybe Chief Director Mpho Mogale can speak.
Chief Director, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Just to indicate that I have been monitoring the discussions, and then we also were surprised that this matter was brought to your attention. And one realized that it has not been exhausted enough for it to arrive at your doorstep. So I'm going to propose that in the future, when the portfolio committee receives any correspondence or petitions or any complaint, maybe the secretary to check with the complainant whether they have exhausted all the avenues at the local and also the province, so that you are able to can then deal with the matter very comprehensively, knowing that all the people or all the stakeholders in the very chain have been part of it, and maybe somebody, one of the stakeholders may have not actually placed but the ball or dropped the ball, and then obviously this is a responsibility of Parliament to then take whoever is at fault to make sure that they can comply. So as the DM is said, we will be monitoring the province and ensure that there is an update within a month for your attention. And then we will probably talk to the secretariat as to how do we then demystify it and probably conclude it in such a way that the complainant can give you an assurance that they are certified, and therefore the matter can be then deemed closed. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Indeed, in future, I think I need to stress the point that let us exhaust all internal processes before elevating the matter to the National Office. It's a pity that we only interacted with the with the petition a few days ago. Otherwise, we would have interrogated and
referred the matter to the province to deal with. But having said that, we have already dealt with the matter. But in future, we'll ensure, as you have correctly advised, that we verify all the information and all the steps that have been taken prior the matter can be escalated to national. With that said, colleagues, we are done with the first item on our agenda. Thank you so much, Honorable Mayor and your team. We welcome your presence. It was nice seeing you again after we have met dealing with different matters of VBS. And we are pleased that there's progress in that regard. So hopefully we'll see you when dealing with positive issues now, not only dealing with complaints. Colleagues, the second item on our agenda is the petition that we received from Freedom of Religion South Africa. I will take this opportunity and hand over whoever that will be presenting from the Freedom of Religion, and that will be followed by the National Coctor to give a response. We've seen the letter and the presentation from the department. We'll also afford them the equal time as we did with the previous petition to just take us through the key issues in relation to their petition.
My apologies, sir. Can we be excused?
Yes, by all means.
Thank you.
Right. It's Advocate Nadine Borders from Polisai. Am I visible on the screen and audible?
Visible, loud and clear.
Wonderful. Honourable Chair, members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to present to you this evening and also for inviting representatives from the Department of COCTA to join us in this meeting. Since the draft risk adjustment framework was published mid-April, FourSA, on behalf of 18 or religious leaders representing 18.5 million people, have written various correspondence to the President, to the COCTA Minister, to the Nerve Centre, and also to this committee. And this committee is indeed the first to grant our request for engagement, so thank you very much. Present with me on the meeting this evening, I have Michael Swain, who you know. He is FourSA's Executive Director. And then also present is Ms. Tembi Tulwana. She is the General Secretary of the Nkululeko Yesizwe Association. They represent the African traditional spirituality churches, about 10 million people in South Africa. And then we're also supposed to be joined by Bishop Samuel Ndlovu, who represents the Alliance of Pentecostal and Charismatic Churches, representing about 1,589 churches across the country. I'm not sure, I understand that he's battling to come onto call, so let's see how it goes. I'll be taking the lion's share of the presentation in the short time allocated to us, but they will also, other speakers will also just add a comment here or there at the end and also be available for any questions and answers. So, as I said, thank you very much for the opportunity. We are very hopeful that this meeting tonight will bring some clarity to some very urgent matters relating to the application of the lockdown regulations to the religious sector, bearing in mind that it's now the 24th day since religious organizations have been able to start meeting again, start operating again from the 1st of June. The religious sector is very much committed to doing its part in curbing the spread of the virus and indeed doing what is necessary to care for the vulnerable in our communities, including their own members. But they want to do so within the confines of the law. And as I was saying, many of those clauses that apply to them at the moment, unfortunately, are not as clear and unambiguous at the moment, which makes it exceptionally difficult for them at the moment to know what the boundaries of the law are. So I have prepared a PowerPoint presentation, which I should have been furnished to the committee members as well, but with your permission, I'll just share it on the screen here as well for ease of reference, if you'll just give me a moment. Might just be easier to follow this way. You are already, the committee is already familiar with 4SI, and just saying that in this petition, in this matter also, we represent 18.5 million people of the faith community from across the denominational and faith spectrum, and the structures represented by us in this matter are not typically represented by the structures who the President and the Cooperative Minister have been engaging with on this matter. Right, now the petition which forms the background of our conversation this evening, importantly was sent while the Level 4 regulations were in place. And as you will well know, the Level 4 regulations did not cater for the religious sector in any way. And that brought about a great deal of uncertainty amongst religious leaders regarding what their position is, what they may and may not do, and also great concern that the religious sector wasn't catered for at any of the risk levels 5 to 1. So I'm literally going to skim through some of the slides just to get to some of the main things later on. The purpose of the petition was threefold. It was to obtain clarification with regards to various questions which have been submitted. Number two, to propose the staggered opening up of the religious sector across the different levels. And thirdly, then to request an opportunity for engagement on these issues. It is important to bear in mind that subsequently what has happened is that the President then announced just before the Level 3 regulations came into place that the religious sector will not be accommodated at Level 3. And that in fact then happened when the Level 3 regulations came out on 28 May, together also with directions relating to norms and standards for religious gatherings, both of which were applicable from 1 June. So the question then, of course, is to the extent that a petition was submitted under lockdown level 4, what remains of that petition? What is the status of the petition presently? And as I said, the petition was really threefold. Firstly, it was to raise certain questions for clarification, and all of those questions that were raised in the petition have now been resolved by the regulations and directions issued. That's number one. Number two, I said the purpose of the petition was the proposed staggered reopening of the religious sector across the various levels. And that has been partly resolved in as much as at level 3, where we are now, religious workers or religious officers have been able to reopen, and religious organizations are able to meet again in groups of 50, provided the protocols are in place, and religious workers are indeed able to visit their people for purposes of counseling or grief counseling and so forth. However, what remains the question, and this goes back to the original problem, if I may call it that, and that is the fact that the religious sector wasn't catered for in the original draft framework for the different sectors 5 to 1. So even though the religious sector is catered for now at level 3, two problems arise. When we go to level 2, no provision has been made for what would an increased opening of the religious sector even look like at level 2. And it's also not clear whether those discussions are taking place at all, whether there's any engagement in that regard. But perhaps more importantly, we know that government has said that it is possible that some areas may well move back to level 4 or level 5 even. Now, the difficulty with that is that even though the President announced that as from level 3, religious leaders are now recognized as essential frontline workers, that has nowhere been stipulated, not in the Level 3 regulations, also not in the direction. With the result that should any of the areas move back to Level 4, because it's not specifically specified in any of the regulations that they are essential workers, it would mean that they are not able to fulfill that vital essential function at Level 4. Let me explain. The reason obviously why an area would move back to level 4 or level 5 is because of the high rate of infection. And with a high rate of infection, we'll see potentially increased loss of life. So really the need for religious workers at that stage to be able to fulfill the essential work of counseling people who have lost lives or lost friends or family due to the virus would only increase. And the need for grief counselling and spiritual counselling only become greater at those levels, and yet they will not be able to because of the current regulations and because they're not specifically written in as essential workers, be able to operate at any of that those levels. So that is a definite problem that remains outstanding. All right. So as I said, we're now in level three. Level three regulations allow religious offices to operate. It allows religious organizations to meet in groups of 50. It allows religious leaders to be able to do counseling. As a result of the lockdown regulations at level three and the directions pertaining to religious gatherings, both of which were came into effect on 1 June, however, there are new uncertainties and new questions. And the reason for this is that various of the clauses in the Level 3 regulations are unfortunately not clear or unambiguous. And the result of that is that they are open to varying interpretations by government, by the police, by religious organizations, and even by different religious organizations themselves. And indeed, we have information that it is currently being interpreted differently by religious organizations because of the lack of clarity. Now, clearly this lack of clarity or ambiguity also has far-reaching consequences, because if a particular religious leader organization misunderstands the law, interprets it one way, and the police maybe interpret it another, there may well be legal consequences, including potential arrests or prosecution. So it's very serious, and there is an absolute need for this ambiguity and the lack of clarity to be made clear. And as a result of these unclear clauses, 4SA also addressed a letter to the COGSA Minister on 1 June. And in this letter, we indicated the particular clauses on which clarification is sought. And we also included recommendations as to how these clauses can perhaps be rewritten to make it clear and unambiguous. However, now, 24 days later, we still have not received a response. And it is thus imperative that these questions be resolved as a matter of extreme urgency, particularly as I pointed out, as various religious organizations have now been operating, have been meeting for 24 days already, even in this situation where the regulations are unclear and ambiguous. So this thing perhaps is the most important slide, and really the issues which we are hoping to get urgent clarification on even tonight, would our hope be. And I have had regard to the slides that will be presented by the COGSA department, and so I will be merging some of these slides with my own just to indicate to what extent these have been addressed by the presentation which they will make after us. But the issues for urgent clarification, as pointed out in our letter to the minister, were really fivefold. The first, and it's really only two of these, unfortunately, that are being addressed by the slides by the COGSA department. So three of them really remain outstanding, and I will just quickly run you through them. So, Honourable Chair, the first issue for clarification is religious leaders' status as essential workers. And I've already touched on this, the fact that the President has made it very clear that henceforth religious leaders are recognised as essential frontline workers. However, this has not been stipulated anywhere in the regulations or the directions, with the result that if we had to move back to level 4, level 5, where there's an even greater need for them to fulfil their function as councillors, they will be unable to do so. So it is very important that be rectified, because presumably that is not what was intended by the lockdown regulations and directions. Then the second issue of clarification is the definition of places of worship. Now, we know that the directions pertaining to religious gatherings say that people may gather up to a limit of 50 people, depending on the size of the building that they can accommodate, for purposes of religious gatherings. And then one of the questions that was posed, because places of worship, the definition wasn't clear, is whether this includes homes. Now, we know that various religious organizations, churches, regularly meet in homes during the week for purposes of, say, cell groups or home groups. And this is indeed addressed by the slides that we've been provided with by the COGSA department, and they've made it clear in those slides that it does not include homes. It's only recognized places of worship, churches, temples, synagogues, mosques, so forth. So that one has been clarified. Number three, definition of religious gathering. And again, that definition was not abundantly clear. And one of the questions which was posed to the minister was whether this includes drive-in gatherings. And again, this is one of the questions that is being addressed by the slides that we've been provided with by the COFSA department. And I'm quoting from page 16, sub F, where they say, only traditional religious gatherings were considered, as drive-in gatherings would contribute to the spread of the virus. So the answer obviously is, from their side, no to drive-in gatherings. This, with respect, is contrary, however, to the guidelines that have been put out by the Western Cape government, wherein they specifically encourage drive-in gatherings as an alternative to meeting in a confined space in a building. And also from a medical point of view, I must agree, it is very difficult to see how drive-in gatherings would contribute to the spread of the virus. And we would submit, as we did in our letter to the minister, that quite the opposite is true. Because where people are in motor vehicles, half the capacity of the vehicle, so only two as is allowed in every other instance, or people who live together in one vehicle, and the vehicles are parked in an open space on the religious premises, say 50 vehicles, no more than that, 2 meters apart, the potential for spread of the virus is considerably less than in a building where the virus obviously is airborne and 50 people breathe in and out one another's droplets. So we would say quite the opposite is true, and that there is a very strong argument to be made for drive-in gatherings as an alternative to gatherings that happen in a confined space in a building. And it's for this very reason also that in the US and many other places, drive-in gatherings, in fact, were permitted even before churches were opened up. Then the fourth issue for which we asked clarification on was the issue of the limitation of 50 persons. And it isn't very clear, or it isn't clear at all, from the directions whether 50 persons means per site, does it mean per hall with separate entrance, does it mean per venue? And the reason why we're saying this is because in the case of some large churches, they have separate buildings, separate halls, separate auditoriums, whether it's all under one roof or all separate buildings on one site. Some of them, many of those auditoriums can accommodate hundreds or even thousands of people. And so it would seem somewhat bizarre if only 50 people were to be allowed on site, when 50 people could very comfortably be entertained in each one of those venues on the same site. And so we would submit that our recommendation is that the directions in fact be amended to make it very clear that it should be 50 persons per venue with separate entrance. And this also seems to be the wording that is used by the COFSA department in their slide presentation, where they speak about chosen venues. I think that is in two or three instances where those would occur, and I can point the committee to that should it be necessary. So venue would probably be a better choice of wording there. And then also just as a side note there, we would propose, and many religious organizations are in fact proposing, that the limit, rather than fixing it as a numerical number of 50 people per venue, that it should be fixed as a percentage of the venue's normal seating capacity. And the reason for this is because, for instance, the Nkululeko Yesizwe Association, they often meet in auditoriums that can host 3,000 people. That's just one example. And really, in an auditorium that can accommodate 3,000 people, to have 50 people only seem rather bizarre and arbitrary. So we would recommend that also that be changed rather to a limit of, say, 33% or 30% or another percentage of the normal seating capacity. And this is also not addressed in the COFSA department slides, so we would hope to get clarity on that. And then the final issue that we raised for clarification is the issue of children's church. Just by way of background, children's church typically fall under partial care facilities in terms of the Children's Act. And the Minister of Social Development has said that those facilities need to remain closed for now, but there should be an announcement in this regard soon, so that should then be resolved. Chair, I'm going to end my presentation there. Just to, from my side again, say thank you so much again for engaging with us on this matter despite your already burdened schedule. We are deeply appreciative and we are very hopeful that the efforts, that your efforts to bring the necessary persons and forums or structures together, that it will bring the necessary clarity without any further delay, particularly, as I said, in circumstances where churches are not already meeting and operating for 24 days, and yet there is very little clarity on these issues that we have raised with the Minister on the 1st of June. I don't know if any of my colleagues want to add anything to that.
Few seconds, if there are any additions. I think we have covered, in essence, everything contained. But
I see Bishop and Bill is also joined now.
Okay, I'll give you 2 minutes for addition, and then we'll hand over to Cocta. Is there anyone wants to add? Unmute your mic.
Thank you so much. Sorry about that. I would just want to emphasize the issue of the stipulation of ministers of religion as essential workers, especially because it creates a lot of doubts. We're not sure where we stand. Again, we would like to have religious leaders stipulated again on all levels. Say, for instance, if Kevin, I'm just using an example, were to be reversed back to level 4, level 5 because of the escalation of the pandemic. Again, our responsibilities as counselors down there and speaking to the bereaved families, I think we will be needed much in that area. That is all that I wanted to ask, that the committee will consider that. Thank you.
Thank you. DM, you will advise whether you will go first or we give CRL an opportunity to respond.
Yes. Let me come first.
Can I Sorry.
Okay, just hang on, DM.
Yes, I wanted to make a comment from Nkuleko Yesizwe.
Okay, you have 60 seconds, ma'am.
60 seconds. Okay.
Religious leaders.
Right. We appreciate the fact that we've been given the opportunity to come and present in front of COPTA and all the important stakeholders.
DM Babela, your mic is on.
Registering our appreciation for the fact that we at least have an opportunity now for our submissions to be listened to. However, as Nkuleko Yesizwe, we want to register as well the disappointment that we've had in their attempts to speak to either the President, the Minister of Culture, and all the other stakeholders regarding African indigenous churches. Our feeling is that we are being sidelined for any other reason we don't know. However, we are an important and huge stakeholder within South Africa. And we would hope as we move forward that the sidelining measures that have been meted against us will stop. Because we've tried everything, written to the President, the Minister of COPTA, and also the submission that's been listened to today. So we hope that as we move forward, we'll be able to contribute towards redressing everything that has been against us around COVID-19, because we hold huge stakeholders. For instance, Nkuleko Yesizwe has over 10 million people, and we know how to talk to the people in an effort to alleviate or curb the spread of the coronavirus. But the doors have been closed on our faces. And it does not feel good because we are passionate citizens who mean to do good within the sphere and all areas in South Africa. Thank you very much.
Thank you. DM Bapella, you indicated that you will go first and then after you will hand over to the CRL Commission. And also, we welcome
DM down to our meeting. If you would like to have a bite in relation to issues raised pertaining to the minister and how the matter has been handled thus far, you are welcome to do so. You will also indicate DM Tau at what point you would like to interact. But for now, it's over to you, Cocta. DM Bapela, over to you. We will indicate as well after we have given the input from your team who else will want to have a bite.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the meeting, Honorable Begeha Deve, and to the religious leaders who are present here with us in this portfolio committee meeting, to all portfolio committee members, the CRL leadership led by Professor Musona, and then the officials from the department that are here, including the DG of PTA and the DDG of disaster management. Let me just start by saying it's a very difficult subject matter that we're dealing with. It's a very sensitive matter, and we agree that obviously there needs to be clarities that we need to give on certain aspects of the regulations. And we do so obviously cognizant that we need to save lives, and I think that is our primary objective, so that at the end when COVID is over, we need to look back and say we did our best, all of us across the nation, as leaders, as whether it's faith-based, religious, political, or anybody else, that lives ought to be saved. Just taking a note from what happened with the Spanish flu in 1918 and 1920, it killed almost 50 million people, as reported in the history records. And then the biggest was when the second wave came in during that particular period, where more and more people got killed. And just a few days ago, the minister spoke to the portfolio committee and said during that time, in 1918 to 1920, 500,000 people got killed in South Africa. And the world population was just a mere 1.7 billion at the time. But out of the 50 million people that got killed globally, 500,000 were accounted for in South Africa. So we don't know when the peak is hitting us, as we are now in the winter season now, but also at the same time, we don't know whether there will be a second wave before a vaccine is found. But obviously, life ought to go on, and we ought then to also, but at the same time, be responsible to ensure, therefore, that we save as much life. Current the figures as published is 106,108 infections in South Africa. 55,000 are on recovery, and then 2,102 have passed on. So that is the figure as it stands, and it then indicates, therefore, that COVID is here, and indeed it's now beginning to hit us as a country. But correctly so, you have quoted the president when he said that he did mention in level 3 that religious leaders will be recognized as essential religious frontline workers for purposes of spiritual counseling to their members of faith organizations. So that indeed was the quotation by the president when he was announcing the new move, our level, going to level 3. And you have correctly said, Nadine, that there's nothing mentioned in the regulations currently. And obviously when the department responds, we'll then see this issue, if indeed it's missing and it's not there, as you have already said, and I think you have demonstrated so well, that it's not even indicated that when an area goes to level 4 or 5, whether this essential recognition will move with whatever levels that are adjusted, as we are in what you call the risk-adjusted levels, and indeed we need to make sure, therefore, that this mentioning in the regulation is clear, unambiguous, and also
so it does not create any confusion. I think we'll take note of that particular issue. And also, we take cognizance of the issues that you've raised, that on level 3, some of the issues have been responded to. But when the DDG, Dr. Dau, presents, fortunately, he sits in the National Nerves Joint Center, which also it sits in the streams that are developing some of these regulations. We'll be able then to present a report, but also answer some of the questions that you have been raising, so that then where indeed there's valid issues that you as leaders are raising, we can then take them on board as government, because we are indeed a listening government, and we're all in this period together. We're all in this difficult situation, and whatever our suggestions and ideas that society has, we cannot just reject them. Hence, you see these risk adjustments being done even in level 3, where the healthcare industry is now on, and then also, and the restaurants also have come, and therefore we are coming in also at that level. Lastly, is to say the president has been engaging together with the ministers, with the religious leaders, quite a number of them across all faith groups, but the religion is a very big sector, and I can't leave here to say your voice was well represented in those particular gatherings, but there were quite a number of prominent and known organizations that had come in into that meeting representing the religious leader. But obviously, being a big sector, and I think you have said it in the presentation, there are other that still worship in a house. There are those that are worshiping under trees, in the schools, in the classrooms, and whether the regulations do cover them or they've created confusion. And I think the purpose of the meeting today is to take note where we think there's a point that we can take forward. However, where there are clarity-seeking issues, we are here to answer and then be able to then say why it came that way and not this way. So with that, Chair, I will then want to then say maybe you said the CRL must come first, and then thereafter the DG, Dr. Dau, will then be presenting the presentation and response from COCTA. But I'm not sure, maybe DM Dau will come later during the discussion.
No problem, DM. Can we proceed as such? Anyone from the CRL Commission?
Good evening, Chair, the Deputy Minister, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, and the representation from FOSA. Thank you so much for this engagement. It's a very important one. Remember that our mandate is to protect and promote the rights of cultural, religious, and linguistic communities. Now, in this instance, the issue of the freedom of religion had to undergo what they call limitation in terms of Section 36 because of the reasonable, justifiable, and fair assessment of the situation regarding the protection and promotion of human life. The level at which we are operating now, or we're talking at now, it is a formulation of regulation attempting to protect and promote lives, to save lives in our country. Now, this has nothing to do with the violation of rights, so to speak. Now, what we may have to say is that the inputs from FOSA has to do with the clarification only in terms of operations. How do the religious institutions operate at what level? And this is what is the case here. For example, when you talk about place of worship, it's a designation of place which must be defined in terms of the regulation, but not in terms of the violation of the rights
of the cultural or of the religious communities. So these are subjects which need to be looked at by those who are tasked to formulate regulations so that they are not ambiguous, they are not variably interpreted. There is a sense in which all of them are interpreted. So really we welcome a conversation of this nature. It's in building that you bring people together to find a way out, to find a synergy, to find a common ground. And I think the Portfolio Committee has done well to make sure that these issues may be noted. It could well be in the formal, nascent formulation. They were adequate. But of course, the recipients may have found that the formulations are not enough. So these are subject of corrections where possible, but the main objective is to save life. The last point is that even the counselors, even those who would be giving services to the bereaved families, must understand one thing, that they too are not immune to COVID-19. So they too must be protected, one way or the other. So there must be a sense in which the religious leaders who are tasked to become essential providers of essential work need also be provided, because there is no discrimination in this coronavirus. So we must understand that they too must be saved. So there's a sense in which there must be caution in all of us what it is that we need to do, and we must agree in terms of that objective, which is namely is to save life of our people. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you, Prof. We'll then give to Dr. Tau to take us through the presentation and respond to some of the questions as posed.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and good evening, Honorable Members. Good evening, Deputy Ministers Babela and Tau. Good evening, Prof, the CEO of CLR Commission, as well as the team from the Commission, and good evening to members of the Freedom of Religion South Africa and colleagues from the department. Let me sincerely appreciate the opportunity to engage in this forum. Chair, I would like to just indicate that we have indeed prepared a presentation that seeks to shed light on the discourse that we have so far traversed in terms of dealing with this matter under the guidance of the cabinet as supported by the National Coronavirus Command Council. We also would like to acknowledge the further work that might still be remaining as summed up by the Deputy Minister Babela and Prof in terms of possible areas of enhancement, but also taking into account the imperatives of containing the spread of coronavirus and the impact that it might have on lives of our people. Within the context, obviously, as Prof has indicated, of the Constitution.
Can you assist us with sharing the presentation, or alternatively request Andile to share the presentation?
Yes, thank you, Chair. The presentation, as I indicated, will try to outline how we have responded to those measures. But I've requested my colleague, Ms. Anne Brewer, to take us through the presentation. So if you permit, Chair, I will request that my colleague take us through those points in the presentation. And then we can also be guided once it has been presented. presented on how we move forward on the three category of issues that have been cited, which is the phasing in of the role of religious leaders in across all levels, clarity on clauses in terms of the current directions, and of course some substantive enhancements. So with your permission, Chair, I would request that we have my colleague take us through the presentation, Ms. Annette Brugger. With your permission, Chair.
Now, by all means, are you done with your remarks? I was not attempting to cut in any way.
Yes.
All right, no, then we can proceed there with the presentation. Thank you.
Good evening.
Evening, ma'am. Proceed. The floor is closed.
Good evening, Honourable Chairperson and everyone in the meeting or protocol observed. I would like to share the presentation. I'm not sure if the secretariat can do that, or do you need me to share it on the screen?
They've already shared the presentation with us. I'm not too sure who's going to control. I thought it was done from your side. Andile, who's controlling the slides?
It's from their vice chair.
All right.
Okay.
You can control the slides from your side.
Okay. Can you see the slides? Because
yes.
I have seen. Is
yes.
It there?
It's already visible for all members.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. Then let me take you through. So basically, the purpose of the presentation is basically to provide an overview of the regulatory framework, which is the regulations and directions that governs the operations of religious organizations in response to COVID. And as indicated by the BDG Dr. Tao, this has been done in response to the original petition that has been received. So just as an introduction, government acknowledges the vital role of the religious community, specifically in this time, not least in influencing behavioral changes needed to flatten the curve and assisting in food distribution, but also in providing social work, counseling, services supporting gender-based violence, care and relief activities for the most vulnerable. The next slide basically indicates the role of the religious community in relation to the definition of health as stated by the World Health Organization. And I think we all agree that the current health crisis should not be viewed solely in terms of the impact of COVID-19 virus on the physical well-being, but also their mental and social well-being. And this is where the religious community has a pivotal role to play. As you're all aware, on the 15th of March, Cabinet resolved to declare a national state of disaster in consideration of the magnitude and severity of the pandemic. During the national address, at that stage, the President subsequently announced extraordinary measures to curb and contain the spread of the virus. And you know that after that, our Minister of Co-operative Governance and Traditional Affairs, also published required notices, and the lockdown followed, and there was also a number of regulations that were issued and a whole lot of directions. And as you know, these came into effect in different stages of the period that we have been in. The next slide just talks about the background, which I won't dwell into because I think Deputy Minister Bapela has actually touched on these issues. So let me go right into the regulations that were effective from the 1st of May, and that is the Alert Level 4 regulations. These regulations were published on the 29th of April, and it provided for a list of essential and permitted services. It includes all social work, counselling, services supporting gender-based violence, care and relief activities. And this you will find in the table A of Alert Level 4, which is Part P4 of the regulations. So although religious leaders are not specifically mentioned as essential workers, this part of the services they render under religious services and counseling basically is provided for in Alert Level 4 regulations. But we have noted the concern that it is not specifically mentioned as an essential service. So persons in the list of industries and activities will then be permitted to perform work outside the home, and that is basically to go to work and to render the service that is required from them. All persons who perform the permitted service must be issued with a permit. And this is also one of the issues that has been raised. The permit is not issued by the Department of Social Development or the police services, but it is issued by the head of the institution, and it must correspond with Form 2 of the annexure, which is a permit to perform an essential or permitted service. So this, I can just indicate, is also valid for interprovincial travel under Level 3. So the regulations effective from the 1st of June is basically the Alert Level 3 regulations, as we commonly know that. And then that is on the 28th of May, these regulations were published, and it provides for, amongst other things, permitting religious gatherings such as church services, as long as all the health, hygiene and social distancing provisions are observed. So I think we are all aware of those provisions, the social distance of 1.5 meters, maximum of 50 congregants, and so forth. So it also provides for the places of worship that must be sanitized, and the screening of participants, which is mandatory. And then it also quickly talks to the issue of funerals and the importance of also maintaining social distancing protocols and guidance on that matter. So when we look at the regulations also that apply for religious gatherings and for people permitting allowed service for rendering allowed services, it is on movement, and that is Regulation 33, which provides for the movement of persons to perform any permitted service under Alert Level 3, and of course that includes services for religious gatherings and also for rendering religious services. And it also allows for people to attend a place of worship in the same or another metropolitan area or district within the same province. So that is as it pertains to movement. Then, as you have rightly indicated, the issue of gatherings. Religious gatherings are permitted, although it is limited to 50 persons or less, depending on the size of the place of worship, and provided that all health protocols and social distancing measures are being adhered to as provided for in directions. That was then also issued by the Minister of Cooperative Governance. And as you can see in Sub-Regulation 2, it also provides for enforcement of that. So an enforcement officer must, where a prohibited gathering takes place, order the person of the gathering to disperse immediately, and if the person refuses to disperse, take appropriate action. So what it means for a religious gathering is that if more than 50 people are in that religious gathering, it will also be unlawful. The next slide goes to the directions of religious gatherings. And as you know, on the same day that the regulations were published, there were also directions published by our minister. and the purpose of the issue directions in the schedule relates to norms and standards for religious gatherings that are permitted under regulations to address, prevent, and combat the spread of COVID-19. So, after consultations with the religious sector, government categorized religious counseling as an essential service, as was indicated before. As you have also indicated, it has not been mentioned explicitly in the directions or in the regulations, and this is maybe something that can be considered going forward. So, you've indicated that the maximum number of people is 50 in the church venue, but currently, as the regulation stands, it allows for 50 people on the premises. So it is not necessarily allowed for different buildings on the premises to have 50 people in each building, if we can put it like that. And also, it was not considered that that people will do drive-in services, so that is also something that must be taken forward. And the issue that you have raised with regards to the very large church venues is that currently it is a fixed number of 50 and not a percentage as you have proposed. So those issues are things that will have to be considered through the through the structures that have been established, the natural structures, and eventually a policy decision will have to be taken on that. So just furthermore on the direction, religious leaders or persons in charge have some obligations in terms of the direction to make health and safety measures at the places of worship, and they must develop plans and protocols on how they will manage this process and how they will ensure the health and social distancing, how it will be observed, and also ensure that any religious ritual that requires personal contact is not performed during religious activities. So there's a number of things that that must be contained in the plans of the religious organizations when they have religious gatherings. So amongst these, also ensuring that the register is kept, and this register must be retained for a period of 6 months, and it must detail names and contact details, residential addresses and contact persons, also for purposes of being able to do contact tracing. So, I believe you have all already established the COVID committee to establish the state of readiness of the organization or the religious organization, and to verify the existence of the plans that are required in terms of the direction, as you have indicated that you have already opened. The next slide basically just indicates all the activities that are excluded under alert level 3. So by implication, if any activity is not listed in that table, it is allowed under alert level 3. So once again, the services that are rendered by religious organizations are allowed. Some of the other issues that have been raised by 4SA is the issue about the permit, but I think I've already mentioned that in the beginning, that the Department of Social Development and the SAPS do not provide these permits. It is the head of the institution that must do that. And pastoral care and visits of persons in need of spiritual or grief counseling are currently permitted. Of course, while observing regulations and protocols, food distribution to vulnerable communities or persons under the care of a religious organization is also allowed. There was also an issue of marriages, And in the meantime, the Department of Home Affairs issued direction for level 3, allowing for the presiding over marriages, which required the number of people to witness and so on, the marriage officer. Then one of the questions was also with regards to, does a place of worship include a place of residence? And under the current regulations, that is not the case. The religious gatherings are to be conducted in terms of the directions. There is a definition of a place of worship, and the number of the congregants is limited to 50, and they must ensure social distancing and all the hygiene measures. So at this moment, that is also something, if it seems to be a misunderstanding on the definition of and the place of residence, that should be still addressed or considered. As we've indicated before, the only traditional religious gatherings were considered, and driving gatherings is a proposal that will need to be considered. I think at the time, the consideration was that the number of cars, even if it's a drive-in, there might be a situation where people will have to use common facilities, and that might pose a risk. So that is something that needs to be discussed. In the original petition, there was also a question about the sale of the educational material, and just to confirm that this was indeed allowed under Alert Level 4, and it is implicit that religious material is also educational, and this also is applicable to the production of materials, as was indicated in the petition. One of the other areas was around the UIF benefits, and I think there has been extensive communication in the media about UIF, which falls under the Department of Labor, Employment and Labor, and if there are any specific details required under that, it might be better to get that clarification from the relevant department, although in principle it is provided for. So I think that basically covers most of the things. I've already dealt with the few areas that still need clarity, and I don't think we are currently in the position to give a definitive answer on that. But we can commit to raise it in the various structures as an adjoint, and that it can then be also taken up to the NCCC for policy decision making. So I think in conclusion, I would like to close with the words of our president: a very different South Africa and world awaits us. The greatest test will be our willingness to embrace change. Let us rise to meet this challenge. Let us stand as one family and one nation to build a new and stronger society. The days before us will be difficult, but we will draw strength from what we have achieved. And I think we cannot do this without the support of the religious community. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. DM Dawood, do you want to have a bite?
So thank you very much, Chair. Just to say that as is evident from the presentation, the earlier submission, the presentation responds to some of the issues that have been raised by Freedom of Religion SA, but many of those would have to be considered as suggestions and submission for consideration, and they would have to then go through the due processes of government, including the National Corona Council, Common Council, and through that to the National Cabinet for final decision. So we probably have to separate the two those that have to be processed would be taken through a process of submission as presented this evening, and those where we've been able to respond, we can further provide any clarity that's required. Thanks.
Thank you, DM. Honourable members, any takers, questions of clarity and proposed way forward? Can I see by show of hands? The platform is only open now for members of the portfolio committee to engage, and unfortunately we've afforded the opportunity for the petition to be presented. So we are now going to only give hands to members of parliament. I see Honorable Geza, Honorable Mkalipi, the second hand. Are there any other hands? Geza and Mkalipi. Are those the only two hands? Honorable Geza, you can proceed.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
If my words are not covered, I'll come.
Noted, Ma'am Kava. Proceed, Honorable Kaza. You are noted, Ma'am Kava.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Look, I went through the proposal, the presentation here, Chairperson. And I would propose sincerely that perhaps the members of the congregations in the form of the structures that are here can consult with the minister in question and the president himself in terms of the clarity. And I'm happy that the DMs are here to also assist in terms of those clarity seeking questions. I think that they are genuine questions of clarity, and they require attention, focused attention. And look, Chair, these regulations, as we have them, seek to protect the members of the congregants in terms of alert level 3. And then 6 of them that I read, that no more than 50 worshippers are allowed to congregate. Services are limited to 2 hours. No singing is allowed. Masks must be worn at all times. Social distancing must be adhered to here. And the last one, and surfaces must be cleaned, disinfected between services and after services. And I should think that that all that at the initial stages to actually provide protection, particularly as it relates to the members of all churches in terms of that. And I've just a few questions that I want to raise with the for South Africa, because I hope that they would have provided us with the number of people that perhaps have been affected by COVID-19 since the reopening, and whether there are systems in place to sanitize, to protect those members. And lastly, Chair, what lessons have been learned in light of the fact that there was a virus spread in Free State in March after a religious conference in Bloemfontein, noting that it was held before lockdown and in the Eastern Cape as virus was spreading through funerals. Yeah. So our solution would be to say that perhaps they are rightfully concerned about this clarity seeking questions, and they should consult with the minister to clarify and the president in terms of what they seek to hear. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mkhalipi.
Chairperson, I don't know where to start, because Nathi, we're in the same understanding with the, is it FOSA, Nadine? Your organization is FOSA. So you are in the same situation with you. It is the Act of Parliament that COCTA, because the Minister of COCTA, the country is operating with the Disaster Management Act, which COCTA is the custodian. But in actual fact, we've got nothing to do with these regulations, this committee. At one point, we also said to the minister, we would like to be also to be consultant. So unfortunately, we can't address your concern as a committee. At least the two DMs are here. They can also defend you. I mean, they can defend the minister, because in actual fact, I'm very happy that you said you have raised your concern to the minister as well as to the NEF Center. In an actual fact, we've got nothing to do with anything in that regard of the regulation. So unfortunately, you can't provide you with answers. And what we can do here, we have to ask the department why they didn't respond to you, because in your presentation, you are putting very clear that you wrote to them and there was no response. You wrote to the National Disaster NEF Center. So I think it's the department that is supposed to respond to you, to clarify to you about those things, about those regulations, about the expansion of the regulations as you wanted to understand. So the committee can't give you any feedback. If you were expecting the committee to clarify you, I'm sure that you are going to be disappointed, because we don't have any feedback as the committee. What we know, we took a stand as this committee from the beginning when the COVID started. We said to the minister, we assured her to say, Minister, we are from different political parties, but we are not going to fight you, because COVID is new to all of us. That's why the DM was also reminding us that there was a Spanish flu that took so much life, so many lives in 1818. So therefore, when COVID arrived here in South Africa, we also took a stand to say that we must be united as South Africans, because our goal also is to protect the lives of South Africans. That's why we also, if there is a regulation that is taking place or is pronounced by the minister, we also support that regulation, because as Honorable Preza was alluding to the fact that we want to save lives of South Africans. In different political parties as we are here, we have our positions. For instance, us as EFF, we are totally against of easing of the lockdown. Because we are saying that there is no basic scientific to open the economy, and people are still dying because the curve is not flattening. We are having cases on daily basis that are rising, and you are against with the easy of locking. I mean, of opening the economy and so on. So therefore, also this thing of allowing churches, we know that many churches were putting pressure to the country, to the president, to say that they want also to be recognized. So as a result, the president with the minister said, no, it's fine, as long as we are going to make sure that you adhere to the regulations. But the actual fact is that even in the churches, as you allude to your presentation to say that you need some clarity in terms of 50, how do you make sure that 50 is adhered to? Some of the churches, they don't have that bigger spaces. You know, some of them, they even worship under the tree. So if we wanted to get clarity from this committee to say that, in fact, we make an example of a hall that has two entrances, who can accommodate more than 50. So really, to us, we are not concerned about all of those things. We don't support that. We, as long as our people are safe, that's what we are always also emphasizing to our communities, to say that let us all be united, let us all wait until the storm is over. Then we can go and worship, we can go and have our life. So to come and to say that, no, now, let us go and worship, let us make sure the hall can accommodate 100, the hall can accommodate more than 50. But at the end of the day, what is happening in the Eastern Cape is because of the funeral, because people, they, I mean, this thing needs all of us to go and preach to people, because one of the challenges in the Eastern Cape, that's why this COVID-19 is spreading like this in the Eastern Cape, is because people, they still gather in a number of people. They don't see this thing as a killing disease. So therefore, I will plead with the department to attend to those concerns that were raised by FOSTA, and to give them clarity, and Dr. Tau tried, and also the presentation, I think it will help. But I will also plead with the department that they must not wait if there is something that needs to be addressed by the department, because it comes back to us as a committee. And Chair, I must also register my concern. I don't think this meeting was supposed to take place, because as committee members, we also lost when we listen to the presentation, and unfortunately you can't provide answers. I think that when FOSTA wrote to the minister and to the NEF Center, the department was supposed to attend to their concerns. Because now we are sitting here listening to their concerns, while we know very well it's got nothing to do with the regulation. So it means that the department didn't do their job, because each and every person who is raising a concern to the department must act, must listen, and must also attend to those concerns that are raised, instead of to convene a meeting of this nature whereby as committee members have got nothing to do with the regulations. Even the department knows very well. We spoke here, it was also officially raised here in this platform to say, Minister, we feel that as a committee we are just rubber stamping, because we only know about the regulations when it's processed somewhere else. And as committee members, we're supposed to defend those regulations. And you are not even consulted when those regulations are being initiated. But again, she agreed. She said she will, in future, she will make sure that the committee is also part and parcel of the new regulations. That is my proposal, the person of the day. Thank you.
Mamu Kaba.
Come the chair. I'm ngoba bayilungisile iy'nkokheli zami lezi sey'khulume before me, Chair. But in actual fact, Chair, what I can say as a committee and the department of COGTA, we don't even have anything to say to this regulation except the command council who can say something on top of this regulation. Even us, as the Honourable Member, Mkarib, has herabolating that we don't know nothing about it. We cannot say anything. I think the Command Council, which includes President, Deputy President, and all ministers, because this regulation, they are not from COGTA. They are from Command Council. Chair, I can say thanks for Honorable Mkhalipi and Honorable Xeza to clarify any this clarity. Hey, yeah, it was very nice. I listened to Mkhalipi attentively, and he say each and every small and nothing that can make me and anyone to understand about what these churches, they must do. Tina, we cannot do. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Members. Those were the three hands that
indicated they would love to interact. I will then give to the department, Dr. Tao and DM Mbapela and DM Tao, if you would like to respond to some of the issues. And there was a question from Honorable Keza that was asked, and will give 4SA an opportunity to also respond to, I think it was one question in relation to lessons learned after level 3, whether or not you have an indication or understanding of the number of positive cases, given the fact that previously there were no precautionary measures in place, and we've seen the rise in infection as it relates to church services. Now that we have these measures in place, can you give an indication? I think the question was to that effect. So I will give you the first opportunity to respond to that question, and then once you're done, we'll give the department, Dr. Tao and your team, DM Mbapela and DM Tao, if you would like to respond to some of the issues, you will go ahead.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you once again to the COGSA Committee. I know it's your precious time, but thank you so much for just creating a platform where these questions can be addressed to the department, that there is an opportunity to engage. So again, we are deeply appreciative for creating that opportunity. So in relation to Honorable Caesar's question on the number of people that have been infected or tested positive since reopening, it is of course very difficult to say, because since the declaration of the National State of Disaster mid-March, churches have not been able to meet. So we won't have the statistics from that time to now, because churches haven't been able to meet, as I say. And since the reopening of churches on the 1st of June, again, the regulation doesn't say churches must open or religious organizations, mosques, temples, synagogues and so forth must open. It simply says that they may, subject to the limit of 50 people and subject to the normal protocols being in place. So many, many, many religious organizations have in fact chosen at this stage not to reopen, but to continue meeting online. And the question therefore is really one of practically, are religious organizations able to meet these very stringent measures that are put in place? And it's only if they are able to meet those legal requirements that they should be meeting. And that is obviously in with a view to curbing potential spread. So it's very difficult to say that even the cases that have come out of churches, which we're not aware of, or if I wouldn't have that those kind of statistics, but it's very difficult to say whether those people who, since the 1st of June, tested positive, whether it was because they attended a church service or whether they were already affected by the time they attended the church service and the symptoms only presented afterwards. Perhaps I can just also point out that in the directions, this wasn't specifically mentioned by the department slide, but in the directions it very specifically stipulates what is to happen, the type of assessment form that needs to be complied with by every single person who attends at the doors. It's very comprehensive. It's really been a major administrative, I almost don't want to say burden, because rightly so, but it's really been very administrative heavy on churches, putting all these forms, symptom assessment forms, temperature checks in place. And then there's also a whole range of requirements that they need to comply with in terms of if a person starts feeling sick at the service, what they need to do, what the religious leader is to do, the information that needs to be obtained from the person, also with regards to people that they live with in their homes, so that if they should present with symptoms, those people can be contacted. It includes, for instance, that if a person has tested positive of COVID-19, that person must immediately inform the religious leader of any religious activity he or she has participated in 14 days prior to the test result. So really, there are very, very stringent requirements. And this also touches on the second question that the Honourable Caesar asked, the systems to sanitise to protect the members. The systems, both in relation to the checking of members when they attend at the entrance for the first time, what needs to happen during that time, the sanitisation, the wiping down of equipment, of chairs, all of those things are really stipulated in detail and need to be complied with by every church. In fact, every church or religious organization needs to prepare a readiness plan before they are even able to open up the congregations again for services. And obviously, if they don't comply with those systems, then clearly the penalties, the legal penalties that apply both in terms of the Level 3 regulations and the directions would come into play. So really very stringent measures, perhaps more so than what would apply to shopping centres. All of these things don't necessarily happen when you go to the spa or the Checkers to go shop. And yet for churches, these are very stringent measures, and rightly so. And churches are doing their utmost to comply with these in order to curb the spread of the virus and save lives.
Thank you, Nadine. Dr. Tau, any response?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'll just respond on the matter about whether we government has responded to the issues as raised by Freedom of Religion South Africa, FOSA. But Chair, government has responded and very promptly to this matter. Firstly, since the FOSA started engaging government in May, to be specific, from the 5th of May, and subsequently the 14th of May and the 10th of May, we have been in very close contact from the NEF Center side and from the NetRine side, in terms of ensuring that their submission is discussed at that level. And as Chair, I think just drawing our attention to the letter dated the 1st of June, we will notice that Section 3 of that letter states that, I quote, "We address this letter in the first place to thank government for rightly considering the submissions and proposals made by the religious community, including Freedom of Religion South Africa, on behalf of the religious leaders and organizations," close quote. So this is really a demonstration that government has always been responsive to these submissions. And indeed, Chair, the directions that were eventually gazetted is basically a manifestation of a consideration of the interest of the religious fraternity, and of course with due regard to the risk-adjusted approach to containing COVID. So after receiving letter of the first, I can state that our colleagues from Department of Traditional Affairs on the 4th of June tabled the new proposals or additional proposals to the net joints, which also involve presidency. And it was indeed agreed that there will be a need to look through those issues and see how they are being processed. So in a nutshell, I'm just saying, Chair, subject to the risk-adjusted approach, this measure, these submissions have been receiving attention, and they will continue to receive the necessary attention, and the appropriate decisions will be made by Cabinet through the NCCC. Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honourable Members.
Thank you, Dr. Tau. Before I give to the DMs for a way forward, I think what is clear, colleagues and to the 4SA, is that indeed when the petition was initially drafted, it was during Level 4. And some of the issues contained in the petition has been overtaken by events. You've well indicated that through your interaction with the presentation, out of five issues that you have highlighted, there were two that were responded to adequately and three were outstanding. Now, what it means is that indeed, we as a committee, I think I need to stress this, that we are responsible for oversight of the department in implementing its work and mandate.
As such, we are the custodian of the legislation in relation to the national disaster. So your issues were not misplaced by referring them to the portfolio committee, even though we are not to interfere with the work of the executive and cabinet. Ours is to ensure that whatever decision and programs that are implemented by the cabinet will play an oversight role and ensure that work is done accordingly. So we might not be a relevant a structure in terms of drafting of the regulation, but we are the custodian of the national legislation in relation to disaster. So what we have heard thus far is that there is willingness. Our government is a caring government in that we believe in consultation and collaboration with its citizens. There has been an undertaking that matters that have not been properly addressed or clarified because of the nature of those issues and the mandate to respond or amend such issues. Those issues will be forwarded to the Met Joint and NCCC for consideration. Where there's a need to reconsider and amend, such consideration will be taken by the Met Joint, and they will arrive at the appropriate decision based on the advice and the gravity of the proposal brought forward. So what is clear from tonight's interaction is that there is willingness to consider, and there is willingness to engage, as it has happened previously. And as it highlighted from your presentation, it is clear now that at least a majority of your issues have been covered. So that will be my summary, but I will hand over to the DMs to also interact and give us a way forward in relation on how then do we deal with the matter moving
forward. Lelen is very late on Monday.
Whoever is that person is or Lale late, can you please mute your mic? We are not privy to the discussion that ensued prior to the response of Ugudu Lale late. But DM Dawu, DM Bapela,
Slalo, before you allow DM, I just want to get some clarity.
Okay. Yes, Honorable Khalifi.
Yebo.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to get it. Yes, thanks, Chair. Ngifuna ukucheka la ukuthi uDr. Dawu, as he was responding on some of these issues, am I correct to say that I heard him saying that those concerns that were forwarded by the 4SA, they were attended to, and some of them they were still going to be attended to? Is that what he was saying?
Dr. Dawu?
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks to Honourable Member for the question. Yes, indeed, the letter of the 1st of June has been considered, and the issues will be, it has been agreed, and the presidency is on record saying these are issues that we need to attend to through the relevant structure. So the issues are being considered. I'm just not sure whether there will be new ones coming today, but from the letter I can see that all the 5 points that have been summarized are well captured and they are being attended to. So the process is ongoing to deal with those issues. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay, Chairperson, can I have a follow-up on that one?
All right, before we give over to the Deputy Ministers, yes, go ahead.
No, I'm covered, Chair, because
they are left with 19 minutes before we exceed our allocated time. Continue.
Yeah, ungabeki uThey ozoba strict ngesikhathi, please. No, I just wanted to say that now I'm covered when the when the Dr. Tau is saying that no, in fact, those issues are being attended to. Because our difficulties as a committee, the good and general defendants would defend them, but our difficulties as a committee is that we didn't know, we didn't get it from the department to say that, okay, there was these concerns that were brought to their attention and it was attended to. So my last question is to ask Dr. Tau, did they contact them? The people who were raising the concern, did they contact them? Did they communicate with them to say that we acknowledge of your concern and you are in a process of addressing your concerns? Because my understanding for this matter to come before this committee is just that they didn't get any feedback from the department.
Dr. Tau, did you capture the question? Have you managed to get back OSA and indicate that the matters raised in the petition are receiving the necessary attention?
Chair, may I request to check with the legal and regulatory work stream that dealt with the matter, but if any of my colleagues here, especially Mayor Shandu, who was part of that meeting, can comment, I'll also appreciate with your permission, Chair.
No problem, because I think indeed earlier on when 4SA started with their presentation, there was an outcry that there seemed to be a perception that matters raised by them were not given the necessary attention it deserves. But we are happy and we are pleased to hear from your side that it's not the case. Issues are dealt with and the matters are in the process of being given the necessary attention it deserves. I would like at this stage to call upon the two deputy ministers to summarize and give way forward.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. But also take a point also from what Honorable Mkhalipi was saying, that if people write to government, write to a minister or write to the president, there need to be a form of response. And I think the SDDG is going to just check whether that response was formulated and sent. But from the meeting, obviously, we had heard that there was no response. And hence, the people came to the meeting thinking that they had been ignored or sidelined. And I think those were the words that were used. So if by that nature, then that happened, we'll then have to rectify it going forward. So when people write to government, will respond. But secondly, I think DDG, if you could, and when we meet with the religious leaders, and I think DG Dupofag are also there from the Department of Traditional Affairs, there are many, many formations of the religious sector. So now we know the 4SA, so that it could then be included in the listing of those organizations that represent interfaith or religious organizations that we have to include in the consultations, so that whatever are the issues that people raise, they have satisfaction that they were able to present matters to government, and government has obviously, under the very difficult circumstances, allowed some to come in, but obviously others will not be, because what we care, and as all honourable members were saying that spoke, that we need to save lives and we care to protect life. Because this disease, this pandemic, it's an enemy to human beings, and therefore we ought to do everything possible to make sure, therefore, that life is protected. The second issue then is that bringing matters to Parliament, Parliament is the people's tribune, it's the people's parliament, and I think we should encourage people to approach Parliament, but yes, agreeing also with the criticism that was raised that government must process matters to the satisfactory. Only when people are not satisfied with what happens in government, then they will then come to Parliament, which obviously is the people's voice. It's where people will then have their hope that they will be listened to if at one point or the other government does not listen. So it just happens therefore that when they realize that a letter of response was not coming, then they wrote a petition to Parliament. And I think it's a learning lesson that we are taking forward, and I think we'll then have to make sure, therefore, that all processes must be exhausted, and by Parliament will still be the place where people are aggrieved and not happy with whatever response that they will then bring matters to Parliament. I think we all agree that we want to save lives, and we call on all South Africans that let's save lives, defeat the coronavirus, and then curb the spread, flatten the curve, and save the lives. Whatever we wish to do normally, we can't do because of the limitation of rights, which is a constitutional mechanism, but it is not because of anything except the pandemic called coronavirus or COVID-19 that has visited human beings all over the world, and circumstances differ from one country to the other, and we just have to make sure, therefore, that as it mutates, it moves and it spreads from one person to the other, we just have to make sure, therefore, that all the protocols and the regulations and are adhered to, and then we're able to save lives. And those issues that need further clarity, I think we do agree that we'll take them through to the department, to the net joints, and then indeed they will then be considered for the National Command Center and then to the cabinet finally. Particularly this issue of clarifying the religious leaders as recognized essential service, that it ought to be as clear so that it's unambiguous, so that even when the police perform their duties, they don't then confuse people that are providing that service in whatever form, virtually or home visitations, where it's doable within the hygiene protocols that are established, so that the religious leaders can then perform the function if indeed there's confusion in the sector. Thank you very much, Chair. I think I'll just stop there for now.
DM Tau.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just to confirm that as far as I recall, at least from the point of view of the nerve center, there has been some interaction with for SA, and that interaction has sought to deal with some of the matters that have been raised, including in certain instances considering some of those as submissions for consideration. I think what we do have to appreciate is the number of queries that are received with regards to the regulations and directions that are issued, and therefore the process that it takes for the appropriate authorities to clarify certain issues, because different queries have been raised with regards to these interpretations, and I think it is important to acknowledge that it would take some time for them to be processed. In certain instances where there isn't full clarity, that they would require some process of review so that that clarity can be provided. Because you do want to ensure that there is a common understanding and common interpretation of what needs to be done. But as I said, Chair, we do acknowledge the submission that has been made, some of those that have been responded to already. It might not have come as a direct response, but as part of the consideration in the review that has taken place, some of these issues that we say are overtaken by events were issues that in fact were also taking into account the various suggestions and submissions made. And some of those that have not been finally processed would then go through a process of consideration, and that would need to be provided. I think, as indicated by DM Mapela, it is important on the side of the nurse center government as a whole to at least give some form of written response to say these matters are receiving due attention, will go through a process, and will revert back to you. Because in that way, you create clarity to everybody that is interfacing with government as to what has happened to their query and their submission. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Deputy Ministers. I think 4SA should find comfort from what the two Deputy Ministers have alluded to, that the intention was not to deliberately ignore. Indeed, your issues are being dealt with the attention
has been given to your issues. It wouldn't make sense for this government, who believes in that people should govern and not to listen to the people when it comes to issues of this magnitude. We are all in this together. We are required to work as a unit if we are to defeat this pandemic. So moving forward, the department will respond in writing and clarify some of the unclarified and ambiguous issues so that we are all clear. Those issues that are not at our in mandate, those issues will be referred to the Joint Command Center and will be referred to the NCCC for further consideration, and if needs be, a consideration will be taken as such. So the department will respond accordingly in writing. We thank you for raising issues in an attempt of saving lives and ensuring that we work as a unit in defeating the pandemic. We really appreciate your time.
I just wanted to ask if, for the record, I may just mention when the correspondence, the various correspondence were sent, and when the specific correspondence to which answers weren't received, seeing that that is a question that is hanging in the air now.
We were waiting for Dr. Tau.
I have the document in front of me.
Okay, Nadine, you wanted to give us the date?
Yes. So the first communication from 4SI was on the 27th of April, when we wrote to the COG sub-minister in response to the call for comment on the draft schedule, and no response was ever received to that letter. Then on the 8th of May, 4SI again wrote to the presidency and the COG sub-minister on behalf of 18.5 million people. No response or engagement was ever received in respect of that letter. On the 26th of May, that was just before the announcement of the Level 3 regulations, we again wrote to the President and the COG Minister on behalf of 15.5 million people. To date, no response has been received to this letter or any engagement with the letter. It was only in the recent weeks, recent week, that we received communication with the Nerve Center, just saying they're looking into the letter. We sent various communications saying it's really becoming urgent, also in light of tonight's meeting, that we don't want to waste the committee's time.
Okay.
Promises were forthcoming, but unfortunately, to date, no answer. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Nadine. I think the point has been made, and the undertaking has been made as well. And there is work that has been done and consideration into all your issues. I think what's important is the fact that your issues are being given the attention it deserves. So we have clarified that aspect. So we are not saying your issues are less important. It's important to highlight that point, that your issues are receiving the necessary attention it deserves. Dr. Dawu?
Chairperson?
Before we close, yes.
Yeah, I think it's only fair as well to check with Dr. Dawu or the department the time frame, as we did with the other people who came before this item, because I think this is the only way forward. If we listen very carefully, Chairperson, they just want to know when are they going to get the response.
That's
so our role here as a committee is to say, give us a time frame in order for us as a committee to make a follow-up as well.
That's what I'm doing, Honorable Mkhalipi. Hence, I'm handing over to Dr. Dawu to give us a sense of when will the written response be forwarded for us to be able to make a follow-up.
Sure.
Dr. Dawu, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. I thought, Chair, you have done great work for us, and the DMs has also indicated that the department should acknowledge receipt and indicate that the matter is receiving attention.
we will precisely do that and be guided by our minister as to what else to put in the letter as we, the department acknowledges receipt. It has been indicated this has to go through processes, consultative, multi-sectoral processes, and we will do all this with the guidance of the leadership. So we'll work on the letter with effect from tomorrow, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I understand. Given the magnitude of the issues and the multi-stakeholder involved in this matter, we take comfort in the fact that the matter will receive the necessary attention and the written response will be forthcoming. Thank you so much, colleagues, for your time, and thank you, Deputy Ministers. Thank you, Prof, the Chair of the Commission, and thank you so much, 4SA, for your time. We really appreciate your concern. It can only shape us to becoming a better public representative in executing our mandate. With those few words, colleagues, the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson. You're great.